Made in the city. For the city.
We are Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Ruth Reyes, Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman. A programme today of books, cocktails, places to eat and things to eat.
To begin, Alan will be talking with Mariana Torres from Books for Cooks, the specialist shop in Notting Hill, about what books she's recommending, and then with Sarah Lavelle. Sarah is the director of illustrated books for Ebury Press.
Yes, and Sarah will be talking about how she finds new cookery writers and also about some new and forthcoming books, including the new Ottolenghi.
Espresso Library is opening up in East Road, in the ground floor of the new building that also houses the fire station by Parker's Peace. They were at the big weekend and I went to find out more about them.
And we'll be hearing about the new Aromi. We have details of when it will open and what it will be selling.
Aoife Maxwell will be designing a new cocktail for us all to enjoy. We'll also be finding out about summer cookery schools for kids.
And please remember that we'd like your food news on the programme too. Send us any good news, such as a great place you found to eat, a recipe you really like, or an ingredient you've come across. Or let us know what your favourite cookbook is. Email us, studio@cambridge105.fm, tweet @flavour105, or text 07919 070 490, and we'll try to fit it in.
First, what good new cookbooks are around? Alan has been to Books for Cooks in London's Notting Hill to find out. It has many thousands of different titles. There's also a small cafe at the back of the shop where they cook lunches. For these, they use the recipes from the books they sell, so they really do know what to recommend. Alan spoke with Mariana Torres.
Mariana, you've got some books for us today. What's the first one?
Okay, well, the first one is River Cottage Veg Every Day, which has been very popular at the moment, especially with families with young children. Basically, people keep asking us a lot about how can they incorporate more veg into everyday life.
And this book does the trick?
It does the trick. It's really simple. It's got really exciting recipes. Leek risotto with chestnuts.
So is that something you tried yourself?
Yes, definitely. It's lovely. And you can have this as a main meal. That's the great thing about this book. The recipes, you can have them as a main meal, but you can also have them as a side. So it's really good for people who love meat but want to eat more veg, so they can always add the meat to the side.
So it's not a book sort of primarily for vegetarians?
No. Yeah. It's for everybody who's just trying to eat more veg. It's really useful. Mm. The recipes are so simple that they're perfect for families, you know, busy lives.
Yeah. Okay, what else is in there that you think's good?
The beetroot and walnut hummus. You know, it's got some exciting things as well.
Yeah, that's not something I've come across before, actually. But that should be really quite tasty, shouldn't it?
Yes, I've tried this. It's amazing. And it's so simple. It's just...
But you have to make your own hummus as well. You're not buying it and sort of...
No, definitely. But the hummus, basically, is just a chickpeas, and then you just add the beetroot and the walnuts, garlic, tahini, that's it. It's very simple.
So it's quick to make.
Yes, definitely.
Right, so what was that book again?
River Cottage Everyday Veg.
Right, okay, yeah. By Hugh Fernley Whittingstall.
Yeah. So the next one, Donaghey Fresh and Light. So this just come out a couple of months ago as well. It's a lovely, lovely spring, summer cookbook. I think the design of it as well, it really catches everyone's eye.
Well, the cover is lovely, isn't it? It's full of colour.
It really matches the title, Fresh and Light. The whole book is really bright colours. The good thing about this one is that I find it... I mean, the good thing about all the books, really, that I've picked, they're all healthy books, healthy recipes, because I think that's what people are going for recently. They're always asking, you know, how can I, you know, eat more healthy? And this book, I think, really does that really well. There's a lot of... It's lean meat. There's not a lot of red meats in here. There's a lot of fish. And interesting, it does have halloumi and it has tofu, which is interesting because a lot of meat eaters wouldn't normally eat that. But it has really exciting recipes for that. But yeah, a lot of fish, but really simple as well. I think this as well is... I mean, I wouldn't maybe recommend this so much for a family, but for young people who have time to cook, but...
They do look like good recipes for summer, don't they?
Definitely.
As you say, they're light. Not going to weigh you down.
Yes, I mean, but it also has nice desserts as well at the end, which I think is important.
baked figs in buttermilk custard, that really does look good. You've shown me the photographs, I mean, but I guess it shows you how to make them.
Let's go back to maybe the fish. So the crispy lemon fish with yogurt tartare, it has pictures for every single recipe, huge pictures. You can really imagine how it's going to look like. And then the recipes are really, really simple, straightforward ingredients, and then a little paragraph telling you how to make it.
And they're very short, aren't they, the recipes? Tell us about that. What's that called again?
This is Donna Hay Fresh and Light.
Brilliant. Okay.
Okay. This one is very similar. I love this book, I think, as well. The design of it is incredible. Everything looks yummy. So this is Diana Henry's A Change of Appetite. And I've picked a couple of recipes. So this is Cavallo Nero Bulgur Pilaf with glazed figs. Yeah, I think this book is really interesting because... it's got a lot of grains in it. Mm-hmm. I find that it's coming into fashion a lot as well. People are just being aware of, like, quinoa and bulgur wheat, you know, and it's just... this has a lot of that.
Mm. And Cavallo Nero is quite popular as well, isn't it?
It's great to see.
An up-and-coming vegetable.
Yes, definitely. So everything is very healthy as well. And this one I would recommend more as everyday use as well, but very useful if you're doing it for entertainment. So if you're having people over, you know, friends around, I think this is really appropriate. They're all like really colorful recipes.
What's this one? This looks
This is grilled aubergines with dates, walnuts, and yogurt salad.
Yeah.
So as well, a summer cookbook. Now let's talk about these two. So these are two ladies. Very, very friendly ladies. So we actually did a book launch for these here at Books for Cooks.
What book is this?
There's one on lentils and there's one on chickpeas. So there's Claude and Maria. So one of them is from Lebanon and one is from Italy. Recipes are all Mediterranean-inspired recipes. And we love these books here in the shop. We cook from these a lot, especially over the winter. It's got a lot of, like, stews and, like, one-pot things that you can make, so very, very simple. Like, for example, this one, lentil soup with rice dumplings.
These are the rice dumplings, but they're green.
Yes, got green peas and parmesan.
And quite a lot of olive oil sprinkled on
the
surface.
Well, it's the Mediterranean influence, I think, doing that.
Yeah,
but it's Mediterranean, Middle Eastern. So, yeah, the chickpea book, I mean, it has spicy chickpea and chicken soup.
Yes, it looks good.
Chickpea and squeech stew. So it's a lot of, like, one-pot cooking.
So reasonably easy to...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that, like I said, we do this here in the kitchen for the shop, and it has to be simple.
And they're popular? Yes,
definitely.
And the ingredients, chicken, chickpeas, not terribly expensive, are they?
No, not at all. No, really affordable and accessible ingredients. The spices as well. I mean, in the UK, you can get all these spices easily. Yeah.
If you were a student and you had limited cooking facilities, like just maybe one or two gas rings or something...
Definitely perfect.
Yeah?
Definitely, yeah. Like the one-pot idea, definitely these two books fit into that very well.
And we'll be hearing part two of that in just a minute. But let's summarise the first four books now. First was River Cottage Veg by Hugh Fernley Whittingstall.
Next was Fresh and Light by Donna Hay.
And then two books by Claude Shahina Shahadi and Maria Rosario Lazzati. The first was called Lentils, and the second, Chickpeas.
But back to Mariana Torres now, and the next book will be of particular interest if you're a long-standing listener to Flavour. You may remember that Rosie Hogg used to review books for us when she worked at Books for Cooks.
Rosie Hogg is now Rosie Ramsden, and is married to James Ramsden, the very highly regarded supper club chef in North London. Rosie now writes for Delicious magazine and has her own book just published. So let's find out about it.
It's The Recipe Wheel by Rosie Ramsden. We've heard people talking about this one as a similar book to The Flavour Thesaurus. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Yeah,
one.
Well, when I saw details about The Recipe Wheel, my immediate thought was The Flavour Thesaurus, but it's different, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. If you look into it, it's definitely got a different twist to it. So, basic recipes. So there's, like, risotto, there's roast chicken, gratin, So you can pick a main recipe, and then, for example, here I picked wilted greens, depending on your mood, basically. So you've got, if you've got friends round, you can have wilted cavallo nero with spiced bulgur wheat. But if you're feeling like you want to use some leftovers, you have green pesto with lemon and basil. So that's the wheel idea.
So you have an ingredient.
Yes, exactly.
And there's lots of
options.
Ways of dealing.
If you have something in the house, like risotto or a roast chicken, you don't know what to do with it, you can come here and find out nice ways of doing. So that's perfect. Yeah, definitely.
That's a great idea.
And it always tells you, in the beginning, like, for example, the wilted greens chapter, it tells you a little bit about wilted greens and then little tips and different ways that you can do it. So really straightforward ways, fry, blanch, steam. And then the recipes come, so there's different options. So if you just have, you just want to make up your own recipe, you can just have a look through the first pages and see, have an idea of what maybe you can make up as well, which is really good.
So what other possibilities are there? We've talked about wilted greens.
The next chapter is sponge cake.
So what can you do with sponge cake? I thought you just eat it.
Yes, well, probably you can do a lot more. So if you're having friends round, you can have banana, hazelnut and butter scotch loaf. For example, if you want to use leftovers, you can do salted caramel crumbs for ice cream.
It's a clever idea, this.
So basically, you're using the leftovers, leftover crumbs of the cake to add to your ice cream. Now, I would never think of that.
No, I wouldn't either.
But then you make it tasty and you can just reuse it.
And also making breakfast cakes as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea.
Definitely.
Now, this has only just come out, hasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I mean, we just received it a couple of days ago.
I was going to say, I've not seen it.
But it's gone really well, and people have been asking for it for weeks.
Yeah, have they? Is that because Rosie is known in these parts?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. So people have been waiting for this.
That is a good idea.
Yeah.
Right, this is the last one. What's this?
This is called A Modern Way to Eat, and it's a strictly vegetarian book. And I picked this one because I find a lot of younger generation coming to the shop asking for exciting new vegetarian books. I think there's a there's a bit of a trend with families, but also with young people. They just realize that maybe they should be eating more veg.
Yeah,
basically.
And so this is by Anna Jones, who's not a name I know, actually.
No, she actually used to work for Jamie Oliver. She was working at the 15 restaurant that he has, so she was like kind of trained by him.
So what's in here? The
first thing that this book mentions is she wants to make a few promises about this book, and it says it's indulgent and delicious, it'll make you feel good and look good, it'll make you feel light yet satisfied. So it's all these things that people really want. You want to eat well, satisfied, feel full, but still not feel bad and guilty about what you've just had. So I think this is the good thing about this book. So I picked a recipe here, the mushroom and parsnip rosti pie.
Wow.
I think this looks incredible.
That
I can't wait to make this myself.
Yeah.
And I picked this one, seeded pistachio and squash galette. Now, I find this really interesting because it tells you how to make the galette base. It's very rare that a cookbook actually tells you how to make the bases for, pizzas and galettes and things. And this tells you everything, and it's all, like, wholesome ingredients.
Yeah. These are unusual recipes.
Definitely. That's what I mean. It's exciting. People don't want, the old boring vegetarian food. You can make it exciting.
Yeah.
And
but also, it's a big book, so she's found
definitely
or designed
yes,
a lot of
definitely.
Unusual
There's
recipes.
So many incredible things in here.
All right, tell us a couple more.
Very colourful. Now, this one, another one, very similar. Sweet red onion and hazelnut pizzette.
Yeah.
So it tells you how to make your own. But very colourful, bright vegetables, that automatically makes you feel great if you're having a colourful plate in front of you.
Yeah.
The doughs, it's like good quality ingredients.
Well, it's
not
got spelt
highly,
flour rather than.
And the toppings, always full of flavour and exciting.
Okay.
And also, the good thing about this book I found is just it's also got sandwiches ideas, which is just, it's great. I think, when you're trying to make up a sandwich idea for lunch or something, it's just so useful to have this because you just,
otherwise
every
you just
day
have a cheese sandwich.
Exactly. So it's just, it has the, obviously the usual hummus, for vegetarians that's kind of like the everyday. But it also has like asparagus, and it tells you what you can add to it, and the beetroot and avocado, things that You know, it just makes your life so much easier if you want to have a healthy lunch.
So looking at this one, which is avocado, mm-hmm. it's saying that with mashed avocado you could have...
Feta, coriander, lime, cherry tomatoes, yeah. lettuce.
Yeah. This is actually slightly like the food for thesaurus.
It is a little bit.
Isn't it?
Giving
you lots of possibilities for the same ingredient.
Give you some ideas, yeah.
Great. Well, that's good. Anything else in there? Are there any desserts in here?
Yes, of course. What's a cookbook without desserts?
Wow.
So, salted caramel brownies.
Yeah, salted caramel's popular at the moment as well, isn't it?
I'm not surprised.
It's really, really tasty. Yeah.
It's one of my favourite things. Yeah, so, you know, but she also uses, like, she says you can use butter, but you can also use coconut oil. And there's these things people are, replacing the milk or replacing the butter. You can always do it in other ways. So if you have the options. So I like that about this book.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to use the butter, use the butter. If you want to use coconut oil, use coconut oil.
Yeah.
I think that's
brilliant.
That's great, yeah.
That's a good book. Now, just tell me how many pages there are in that book, approximately, just so that we've all got a feel
for it. It's around 340.
Right, and there's a recipe. Okay, there's photos in there, but
definitely.
There's a recipe not on every page, obviously, but there's...
No, actually, the recipes in this one, they take up a page.
Yeah.
So it's maybe not the most straightforward cookbook, so it's if you have more time, obviously.
Okay. There's probably a good 150 recipes in that book,
definitely,
would you say?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
And they're original pan-dressed noodles with crunchy cabbage and crispy tofu.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Those two books were The Recipe Wheel by Rosie Ramsden and A Modern Way to Eat by Anna Jones, which also looks very good. Books for Cooks is an excellent shop. It's in Blenheim Crescent, which is just off Portobello Road. They also do mail order and pay their taxes. This year, it will be opening throughout the summer, so it's well worth a visit.
And there's a Yotam Ottolenghi cafe nearby.
Mm. Tell us a little bit more about Rose's book then, Alan.
Right, OK, there are 10 what I called ingredients, like braised beef, poached fish, roast chicken. Each one is at the centre of a wheel, and the ideas for it are displayed around the wheel, a bit like a mind map. And the ideas are how to use the ingredients according to, say, the occasion, your budget, or how much time you've got. And then there are the recipes.
It's such a good idea. I really like that... some of the basic information's there too, so you can design your own recipes.
And Sarah Lavelle, who is responsible for cookbooks at Ebury Press, Rosie's publisher, had this to say about it when she came into the Cambridge 105 studios on Thursday.
Well, Rosie's book really caught my attention. That came through a traditional route of she was agented, and it was one of those occasions that is quite rare these days when I saw the proposal and I thought, wow, this is really original, this idea that you present recipes in a visual way. And not only is she a brilliant recipe writer, her writing is very kind of evocative and gentle and sort of no fuss, no messing around. She tells you exactly how to do these recipes and get it right. She's also a very talented painter. So in this package, along with the graphics of the recipe wheels, we have her paintings alongside. So we haven't got any photos. So, yes, it makes it quite a different kind of cookbook.
Mm. And it's just come out, but there seems to be quite a lot of marketing of it. You know, there's a table display in Waterstones, so there's a big push behind it. Have you got high hopes for it?
I've got very high hopes for it, yes, absolutely. I'm delighted to hear there's a table in Waterstones, and I'm about to rush off there and take a photo. Yes, we put these marketing behind it that we do for all our books. We get it into as many shops as we possibly can. We get her features in magazines. I think the beautiful design, it's very contemporary and stylish. It's just getting it noticed because it looks different. Mm. And you, as I say, there are so many cookery books out there. Some of them very generic. They look the same, and to have something that stands out, it just captures people's attention.
Yeah.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105. Still to come on today's programme, summer activities for students at the Cambridge Cookery School, the Espresso Coffee Library, what it is, where it is, and when it will open, and the new Aromi. Now, we know what that is, where it is, but we'll find out today when that will open.
Aoife Maxwell has a new cocktail to tell you about, and we'll bring you Cambridge's food and drink news too.
But first, here's Sarah Lavelle talking with Alan about what the job of an editorial director of illustrated books at Ebru Press involves, ways of finding new writers, and what new books are coming up. If you're an Ottolenghi fan, keep listening.
It's an incredibly exciting job. I think I'm very lucky to have it because I have the freedom to find new talent, to just say this is the sort of thing we want, and go out and talk to people, talk to chefs, writers about their ideas. So I commission the books in the first place. I can come up with ideas myself, and I get proposals from agents who are representing writers and cooks, and then I help them with their vision for the book. I essentially make it real. I find the designer, I find the photographer, find editor and a whole team who put it together and make it the end book.
And are books, cookbooks, are they thriving, or have they been hit hard by the fact that you can download recipes from the internet?
So far, they're doing pretty well. I mean, walk into Waterstones in Cambridge and you will see a vast number of cookbooks. I mean, it's quite astonishing how many there are. It's one of the few areas of illustrated publishing that's doing really well, where you can still sell in very big numbers and you can still charge quite a lot of money for those books. We're talking, you know, 20 quid upwards. I can't really think of another area that sells in such large quantities and at that kind of high price point. The challenge is finding new exciting people and making, you know, more and more beautiful books.
So how do you find new and exciting people?
Well, as I say, there's a lot of research. Some of it's quite hellish. You have to go and eat at lovely restaurants. And, you know, it's just being involved. Twitter is a very big part of it, actually. I spend a lot of time online researching as well. And some of it, as I say, comes that traditional route, the very kind of old school publishing route of an agent sending in a proposal that they've helped an author work up. And some of it's people just contacting me direct. And indeed, that's happened on a few occasions. I've been contacted direct through Twitter by someone. I'm thinking of Claire Thompson, who is 5 o'clock apron on Twitter, if anyone wants to check her out. She's writing a book about cooking for the family, cooking for children. She's a professional chef in Bristol, and she came to my attention through Twitter. We met up, we talked about her ideas. I suggested she go off and contact The Guardian. She did, and ended up with writing a weekly column for them. So she's kind of got that profile, she's got started, she's a brilliant writer. And that kind of comes back to the essential thing, is you really have to be a good writer.
The market seems to be quite dominated by celebrity chefs. Is there much space for anybody else?
There is. And I think it's getting better than it has been the past couple of years. For the past couple of years, if you look at the cookbooks that have sold, you have to go a long way down the list before you hit anything that is not connected with TV in some way. And with that, I'm thinking a Bake Off spin-off or a Bake Off contestant. The ones that have bucked that trend are things like Hummingbird Bakery, which is quite interesting, and Ottolenghi, and The Flavour Thesaurus is a really interesting book too. Completely non-photographic, and it's done phenomenally well, and I put that down to that being bought as a gift, like Ottolenghi. It's all in the beautiful package and design.
And what else is coming up from Ebury?
We've got a new author called Natalia Conroy, who's written a beautiful book, The Kitchen Orchard. She's very young, she's 25. She worked at the River Cafe. She was agented again. She has the most lovely writing style, and this book is about foraging from the fridge. It sounds a bit odd, but it's about using what you have in your kitchen without having to go out and buy loads of ingredients, especially.
And I see Nigella Lawson has says good things about it on the cover as
we
well.
We were very lucky to get a quote from Nigella, and on the back we've got a quote from Claudia Roden and Ruth Rogers and Sally Clark. This book is just going to be phenomenal.
Right.
I have very high
When's it coming out? The Kitchen Orchard. When's it
That's
coming out?
That's the end of August.
Right. And Patisserie Maison, is that a new
Patisserie
one?
Maison is Richard Bertinet's new book. Now, Richard is the king of bread. He wrote two books about bread that are absolutely seminal. And he's moved to pastry. We published pastry 2 years ago. And Patisserie Maison is the follow-up to that. And he's very much a teacher. He takes you through every recipe step by step. So each step has a photo, and he makes French patisserie simple.
Mm, I think that's a good idea, actually, each stage having a photo. It calms you down when you think things are looking
absolutely
a bit odd.
Absolutely. I think people think baking has been so huge in recent years, and it's been wonderful that so many people have discovered baking to the extent that they give up their careers to go into baking and the cupcake business. It's taking them on that next logical step, improving their skills, so they move from cupcakes to more complicated mousses, tarts. That's the idea.
And sorry, is this out now or is
no? That's out in August as well, so about August. A month away.
And the new Ottolenghi, which
the
Ibri
new
publishes, is
yes.
due when September.
That's
is
September.
That?
Yes, so that's Plenty More. It is a follow up to Plenty, which was his second book, a vegetarian book, and which has been a bestseller. We are now over 1 million copies of Ottolenghi books worldwide. So Plenty More is, well, it's more of not the same, because he evolves with every single book, but it's vegetarian recipes, and it's a physically a bigger book, more recipes. Yeah. It's beautiful.
But his column in The Guardian has moved strongly away from the Middle Eastern origins. Does this book reflect that?
It does, in that he uses more Asian ingredients, but that's reflective of his evolution, I suppose, as a chef. He is constantly wanting to change and take in new influences and adapt his cooking. And he gets very excited when he finds new ingredients and he works them
into his recipes. Oh, good. So there's some new ingredients for us to discover.
There are new ingredients. There will be black garlic is one of the main ones he's using. Yuzu as well.
Right, well, I don't know yuzu. I'm sure we all will do.
Asian citrus.
We'll be getting it on the market before long.
Yeah, so like they're the new sumac.
And that's coming out in September. But anything else that's coming up that you're particularly excited by?
We just finished shooting James Morton's second book, which is called How Baking Works. And we shot it in Cambridge. We shot his first book in Cambridge as well. And it's been great fun. And again, a bit like Bertinet, but in a much kind of younger, funkier way, he is telling you what makes recipes work, what to do if they go wrong, why you actually do every step in a recipe, what that achieves.
Yes, well, that's useful. That's the sort of thing that I want to know, actually. I like to know why I'm doing
yes,
things.
Yes, there's a lot of science behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's good.
Without it being daunting, it's just for you know, every cook at home.
And that's next year, so I'm going to have to be patient.
That's March next year, so yes, I'm afraid so.
That was Sarah Lavelle, and Sarah will be back next time with some advice for bloggers who want to get noticed by publishers. The books she mentioned here that will be published soon were The Kitchen Orchard by Natalia Conroy and Patisserie Maison by Richard Bertinet.
And a reminder, if you would like to send us your food suggestions, you can tweet us at Flavour105 or you can email studio@cambridge105.fm.
Summer holidays are coming up. Are there any good courses for children to attend? The answer is yes, as Matt found out when he visited the Cambridge Cookery School earlier in the week.
I'm here with Tina Roche, the Managing Director of the Cambridge Cookery School. Tina, welcome back to Flavour on Cambridge 105. It's certainly been a while, hasn't it? I last saw you back in November 2011.
My goodness.
Now, first of all, for anyone who doesn't know, can you tell us a little bit about the location of the Cambridge Cookery School and kind of walk us through the interior in our minds so we get a good picture?
We are off Hills Road, down the side of Hills Road Sixth Form College. So essentially we're between Hills Road and Homerton College. We work in one big, very bright room because we have all these lovely, beautiful old industrial windows from when this was the carpentry section for the stonemasons. We have a lot of lovely appliances, but also six wonderful large stations, if you like, which are mobile. So we're not fixed to sort of electrical points or anything like that. We use that around the walls. So people cook around very wonderful tables on wheels, which we can, make into individual stations, or we can have around six around them, or we can push them together and have up to 18 or 20, depending on the event. And we can then spread them out and put them in another constellation for sitting down for lunches and dinners and so on. So we can go from quite an industrial working look and feel to quite a cool sort of dining space in a few minutes of pushing our tables around and setting the tables with our lovely tableware.
So everything is very organic and it can just transform in an instant.
Yes, wow. It can.
Shall we talk briefly now about some of the cookery classes that you're holding for teenagers and children over the summer? So, for example, you have many Duke of Edinburgh classes that
yes.
are going on, yes?
This is something that we so enjoy doing and which has become, incredibly popular since we launched them last year. So for the Duke of Edinburgh Award, if you see it through, you'll end up having to do your Gold Award. And there are various options for that that can either be spread out, or there's a residential one where you have to go away. And the idea is that you go out of your comfort zone, if you like.
Yeah.
You need 5 days and four nights learning a new skill of some sort, very independently outside your peer group. So cooking, of course, is a brilliant way of linking into something that's a very useful skill for life. So D of E Gold Award 5-day course is for those who need to do it, but it's also preparing youngsters for life away from home. So it's a cooking for uni, if you like, course.
Mm-hmm.
So they do learn absolutely from scratch. And most of them, when they come to us, to be honest, can barely boil an egg.
Your first time at the cookery school?
Absolutely, yes.
It's amazing.
I love it.
We also get those that are already into that cooking, of course, that's why they've chosen it.
Yes.
But probably 80% really have very, very, very basic clues about cooking and cost of food and how to shop when you suddenly there at uni and, the first week's gone by in a whirlwind and you think, actually, I'm going to have to cook for myself every day now. How am I going to do it?
That's a great idea. Does that largely come from the parents, or do you see any kids who actively seek you out and go, yes, like you say, I really do have to look after myself now for the next 3 years at
least? Yeah, both, I think. Absolutely both. I can see that it's pretty driven by a parent who suddenly, I think, have had a little bit of a panic attack thinking, how is my youngster actually going to survive? And they can't live off pizzas and ready meals. And equally, youngsters who are looking forward to it and sort of saying, I'm really looking forward to this move in my life and it's going to be exciting, but I realise I barely know how to make an omelette or cook an egg and I really need to. And, they're really embracing it. So we have a very nice time with the youngsters at this course because they are so enthusiastic and they're there because they want to be there.
Oh, look how creative she is.
Wow. Well, that's great to hear. I wish you were around when I was starting because I remember quite a few stories. There was one guy who he wanted to cook frozen chips and he literally put the frozen chips in the bag in the oven. He was clueless. This was a guy who went to university.
I know, it's frightening.
It's scary.
It is. Mm. We have certainly been asked why can't we just boil eggs in the kettle?
Really?
So no, it is quite frightening. Or as you say, putting things in with the packaging. And actually the learning curve is so steep for those who come with so little skills that they come in, on the Monday morning with virtually no idea and they leave us on a Friday early evening and often just say, I just can't believe, I feel so confident now, I've learned so much. And that's really rewarding for us because obviously we do feel, well, yes, actually, you will now be able to cook from scratch for yourself and I believe it will stay with them for life. They will cook properly for their families. They are the consumers of tomorrow, they will at least have some clue, thanks to us, going on and on about how to shop responsibly and, how to be a responsible and sustainable consumer, actually. So I take great pleasure in sending them out with a few of those skills.
We are making a strawberry and elderflower coupe, which is fruit yogurt, cream, elderflower, strawberries and sugar, I think.
Yeah.
OK, so these Duke of Edinburgh classes, because they're 5 days, they must occur either during the summer holidays or around Easter time. And there's another week in October, I think, isn't there?
Yes, we are growing in this area. So I think the need is there. But we are almost seeing a split in our activities so that the summer months are more or less exclusively dedicated increasingly to the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award. And we also train chalet chefs as well, so more to cook professionally than for yourself. And obviously they have to be fitted in after the main exam time, so we're ranging from GCSE via AS to A-levels, really.
Mm.
Most of it is the summer months, yes, but also we have a week just before Christmas and usually one at Easter.
Now, as well as these Duke of Edinburgh classes, you also have a variety of others. Again, we're just picking out a few here to highlight. You also have a sushi masterclass for teenagers. Yes, that's Thursday, July the 24th is the next one of that.
Yes, sushi is it's one of my favourites. We have a wonderful Japanese cordon bleu trained chef who comes in, and she has three sons under the age of five herself. So she's very good at cooking with children, and she's very good at explaining everything in a wonderful way. And sushi is actually surprisingly doable at home, and for youngsters it's very tactile,
mm-hmm.
but also it's a bit like if you go, say, to a chocolate making class, that you suddenly look at something that starts out quite messy and then you turn it out and think, ooh, this looks good, I've just made this, this is lovely. So learning how to roll and what's the secret about flavouring sushi rice, and of course it's very healthy, you know, with mainly fish and vegetables in there as a filling, and they can pick themselves, so there's some control of what you want to eat and so on. It's extremely rewarding. So it's a great fun class, and we always supply lots of empty bento boxes. So the idea is that they can go home with, but in reality what happens is that a lot of it gets eaten as it gets made, so it's difficult not to when it looks so tempting.
125 grams of something or other herrings.
Yeah. Matches.
Yes.
Another example of something you do is called Five Family Suppers. Again, this is a course, I think, dedicated to teenagers?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
The reason we've sort of went for five family suppers was the purpose of the course is that the youngsters should be able to go home and say, look, I'll cook dinner this week, so that it covers at least five main courses and five desserts. Not in a particularly rigid way, that it can be combined whichever way you like, and often there's some sort of baked goods thrown in there as well. But basically, I think for a lot of working parents, that would really feel, you know, it's worthwhile. I think often younger children particularly get sent perhaps just to do it for fun, and you'll do another cupcake. I've got nothing against cupcakes, but, you know, there's been a lot of cupcakes done. Whereas, again, you know, our ethos, as you know, is very much about giving people useful skills so that children could say, well, I'm on summer holidays now. It would be good for them to go and shop themselves just to see how expensive it is. But I can take care of the cooking. So, you know, mum and dad, for the next 5 days, I'm going to be in charge of our suppers. I think that's really a wonderful thing for the young cooks, because they are doing something that is a real help and a real skill. And I think their cooking starts to be taken seriously at that point. They're not just producing, you know, something that's a bit of a treat or something that's fun.
And I guess that must generate so much confidence in both the child and the parents.
Absolutely.
Not to mention it being incredibly entertaining for the parents. So exciting to see your child covering that entire week. Have you had any parents come back to you to describe what happened?
Yes, we have, and it's one of our most popular courses, the Five Family Suppers, I think, because it is so useful. And as you say, yes, not least for parents, that they feel the confidence that their children are actually able to do, I think, more things independently than they might think. And although the Five Family Suppers is for young teens, it actually appeals to a lot of the very young teens, say the 13, and 13-year-old is a big category for that one, where if you imagine at home, they may only just really be allowed to use the sharp knives and so on. You know, I think if anything, we're a generation of parents who mollycoddle our youngsters. And for them to just do something that is real and carries with it a responsibility and yes, a certain risk as well. So obviously you have to be responsible and focus on what you're doing. But that it results in a lovely meal for the whole family is great.
Well, Tina Rush, thank you for coming in. It's been a pleasure speaking to you again. And your contact details for the Cambridge Cookery School. So, ready listeners, this is for the website. You go to cambridgecookeryschool.com, or you can email them. This is all one word, learntocook@cambridgecookeryschool.com. Thank you very much, Tina.
Thank you.
We should have a resident cat here, shouldn't we, to give all the off cats to? Brilliant. Well done.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
Now, Cambridge is well known for its cycling community, and over time I've noticed a love of good coffee. So, Espresso Library, a new cycling cafe. Ruth spoke with assistant manager Toby at the big weekend last Saturday, where they had a little pop-up event, to find out more.
I feel like you guys have been opening forever. So when are you actually opening?
We will be opening mid to the end of September. We'll be opening up just over on the park side by the fire station.
Nice. So what's the concept behind it?
The concept behind it is mainly fitness. That's why we're here with the Ethos store today.
Oh.
So we'll be running fitness-based events.
Right.
With cycling and coffee.
Okay.
So it'll be a whole blend of things all together. One of the main things that we have in the actual shop itself is people can take their bikes inside, so there's be room for road bikes inside, so it's a lot safer for them. They can keep an eye on their bikes while they sit and have coffee and healthy snacks that we have on offer as well.
So you say it's cycling, but will you have books in there? It is called Espresso Library.
Yep, we will indeed have books. We'll have bookshelves inside there as well.
Nice.
So there'll be mainly cycling based books, but we'll also be supporting local authors, up and coming authors wanting to get their books out to the public.
Oh, cool.
So people can come in, drink a coffee, yeah, and then look at the books as well.
Oh,
and it's a way of artists getting out there and authors getting out there as well.
Cool. How do you guys pick your coffee?
Well, we've got two suppliers at the moment. We've got the Coffee Officina.
Alright.
And they're based in Essex and they do all of our roasting for us. So we go down Clare Tip from Essex each time.
Yeah.
We've got two at the moment. We've got one from Kenya and we've got a blend, a Fiora blend, more chocolatey. So.
Oh nice, so I'm intrigued. How does one blend fitness and coffee?
Well, it's so that you can, at the end of the day, you come back from a cycle ride, you need to pick me up, you come in for a coffee,
yeah,
come in for a chat with us. And we're going to be a hub for cycling community in Cambridge. So it's a place where they can meet up afterwards or meet up just before, have a coffee and then go off on their cycle rides or fitness regimes around Cambridge. So
how'd you guys come up with this idea?
Well, it's mainly John and Malgo, who's the manager and the owner of it. I'll be the assistant manager.
Okay.
John called me up one day, the owner of it, saying, how do you feel about setting up a bicycle cafe? And I thought that was fantastic. And we've had several meetings testing out different coffees over the time. And it's been 14 months now we've been setting up. So we've perfected all of the designs and what we need to put into the cafe.
Cool.
And it'll be coming along soon.
Like everyone has like a special kind of coffee thing. I'm seeing now you guys have the pour overs.
Yeah, we've got the pour overs as it's the simplest way really and to get the best home brewed coffee. It's quite eye-catching as well. We've had quite a few people stopping by just to ask what it is. We will be using this in the shop as well as the traditional espresso, but it's a bit more time-consuming and a bit different. So, very good. It's leading up to September, so
We
will be around the local area supporting a local event. So.
There we are. Much more emphasis on espresso than the library. I had one of the coffees and it was a pretty good one. We'll keep an eye out on Twitter to see where they'll be before opening day two.
Now the sign is up. They even opened the window last weekend to sell gelato. But when will Aromi at Three Peas Hill be fully open? Time to find out.
We will be opening in about 10 days, next weekend.
And what will you be selling? Is it going to be the same thing as Bennett Street?
Our core products will be gelato, obviously, and then we will be doing pasta as well. This is something that our customers asked a lot, and unfortunately in Bennett Street the shop and the kitchen didn't allow us to do a lot of it, so we definitely do. We're going to be doing several pasta dishes.
What sort of pasta dishes? Will there be anything that's probably new to us?
I would say so, obviously we will do some of the kind of most traditional cannelloni, tortellini and lasagna, but we will also be focusing on our regions, our traditions, obviously like pasta la norma and a few other kind of Sicilian.
So what's pasta la norma?
Oh, pasta la norma is just to die for. It's my favorite kind of pasta dish. Fresh tomato sauce with basil and a bit of garlic, and then you fried some sliced aubergines, and then you put it in the pasta and you grate some ricotta cheese. It looks very simple, very plain, but it's so tasty and wonderful. So I'm looking forward to it myself, actually.
And what sort of hours will you be open?
That with we will stay open up to 8 p.m., similar to Benny Street. But then, once again, hopefully there will be surprises there, so let's keep our fingers crossed.
It might be later than that.
That's right, that's what we hope. But not up to us at the moment.
Yeah, okay. And you've got a licence?
For
alcohol?
Absolutely. This is something, we had in our kind of cards for a long time. So we have applied successful for the a premises licence. But yeah, we will be soon selling alcohol, your limoncello, your Sicilian wine, and etc. Very shortly. And so coming soon. And we are quite excited, and our customers are too, because as
Sicilian wine is something to look forward to. It's not something we see a lot of.
Absolutely. Britain. So we will be focusing on a few very good wines, but also very few kind of good liquors. We use lots of what we call Rosolio, and we will be having Marsala. We will have lots of other very unusual things. I don't think you can find them in many places in Cambridge, at least. Let me highlight that the gelato we will be producing is 100% authentic. We use the same recipe that we use in Sicily since 1957. Most of the ingredients are the same. Even the machine used in here in 3P Sil is the same to the one we have in Italy. We will focusing on tradition and quality. We use fresh milk, we use fresh fruits, and gelato will be freshly made on the day or the night before. The softness, the flavor, it will be overwhelming. It will be quite unique. And to be honest with you, we had so many people, English, that went to Italy, or even Italians, they confirmed the gelato is absolutely the same, if not better, to the one they experienced is in Italy. This is a Romish philosophy. We either do something that we can exactly as it's done in Italy, or we simply don't do it. Most of our products are quite unique, or at least different. This is exactly the same for the gelato. That's why tradition, quality, and flavour will be the key for us in 3P Sil as well.
I wish you good luck.
Oh, thank you. Thank you again. Cheers.
And that was Francesco from Aromi, and they're planning on opening in Pease Hill fully next weekend. Right, a couple of quick food suggestions. Nikki, who's experimenting with strawberries, she says she's found they're great with mint and also with orange, which I didn't know. And we've also had somebody telling us about the number of wild plums now ripe on trees on the streets of Cambridge. Right, something to look out for.
Great, and now it's time for our cocktail of the month. Here is Eva Maxwell to explain how our gooseberry cocktail came into being and how to make it.
A couple of weeks ago, I went to a brunch supper club run by Ivana, who most people will know as one half of the Plate Liquors supper club. So Ivana, along with Jenna, did a great brunch supper club that was kind of a Mexican-themed event, which was absolutely fantastic, and I really enjoyed it. But we did get a cocktail as part of brunch. And although I really like cocktails, I don't often drink cocktails in the morning, I have to admit. But this was a Bloody Maria, so like a Bloody Mary, but with tequila. And it was fantastic. And it really reminded me how much I love tequila. So I started thinking about tequila and started thinking about what I wanted to do with it. And actually then in the last few weeks, I made a passion fruit margarita. So margaritas are one of my big favourites. So, yeah. Quite a simple tequila-based cocktail. Added some passion fruit. Fantastic. Really recommend that. But then got my veg box. In it was some gooseberries. So I started to wonder, could I put together the gooseberries with the margarita recipe and make like a gooseberry margarita? I thought maybe we'd start with tasting a very simple margarita, a usual one, mm-hmm. and then move on from there to our gooseberry margarita. Great. So inspired by local supper clubs and the produce that we're getting at the moment. We've talked a lot about sour-based cocktail recipes before. It's one of my favourite things to do. They're really easy. And actually, a margarita is a similar sour type recipe. So we've got tequila for our alcohol. We're using lime juice for the sour aspect, and we're using a triple sec, normally Cointreau, a well-known brand that's a triple sec, as a sweetness. And they're quite in a slightly different ratio than I would normally use, because although the Cointreau or the triple sec is sweet, it's also a little bit bitter. So we don't need quite as much of the sour, the lemon or the lime juice as we'd use in some of the sour recipes we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
But it is quite an easy ratio to remember. So it's one part lime juice, two parts triple sec, three parts tequila. Okay, so let's have a taste of that. And in fact, I've made up one earlier on. All I'm going to do is shake it over some ice and serve it on some ice, and you can just taste it and use that as our baseline. But before we do that, let me just tell you a little bit about the tequila that I'm going to use. I want to give everybody a top tip for choosing tequila. Absolutely make sure that it says 100% agave on the front. So it absolutely has to say that.
Okay.
The quality is not going to be as good. Yeah. So just look for that 100% agave.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be expensive. Most people use a kind of a blanco tequila for margaritas. I'm actually using this Reposado, which has been aged for between 2 months to a year in oak barrels. I think it gives a little bit extra complexity, but not everybody would like it. Now, obviously, there's lots of different ways that we can serve margaritas. I like to shake them over ice and then serve them on the rocks, because then they're, you know, they're cold and they stay nice and cold as well. And it's simple as well. So I've got my mixture of tequila, triple sec and lime juice in the proportions I mentioned earlier. 3, 2, 1. And I'm just going to shake that over some ice.
Okay.
So I'm going to serve this in a short tumbler style glass that I've put a little salt rim on. So all I did was I took one of the leftover limes from juicing my fresh limes, ran it around the rim, and then stuck it in a plate full of salt to get that. So I'm going to fill that up with some ice and add the shaken. It's strong, it's well balanced, I think. A bit of lime juice. But it is a nice drink. I mean, I like a margarita. I know I've often talked in the past before about having, you know, a very set recipe that we can follow and say, right, we just need this proportions to this proportions. And we do for a plain margarita. But for the gooseberry-based margarita, it's always going to be a bit different, because everybody's gooseberries that they have are going to be a little more sweet, a little more tart. So I've come up with a recipe, but people may need to tweak it for themselves. So, you know, that is something to bear in mind. And it's always the way when you're using fresh ingredients. Even if you're just using fresh lime juice, some people's limes are going to be different to others. So these ones were green gooseberries.
Right.
Yeah, quite green, quite tart when I tasted them
initially. Right, so not the sweet red ones.
Not the really sweet red ones, no. So what I've done actually is, so I took the gooseberries I had and I cooked them down with just a little bit of sugar, really about a tablespoon, just because I always find it helps to cook them down, and a splash of water. And I just let them really, you know, the way you do if you're going to make a puree or a compote or something. And then I let them sit for a little bit, and then I actually press them through a sieve. In my plain margarita recipe, I mentioned I was working on the proportions of 3 parts tequila, 2 parts triple sec, 1 part lime juice. And for a cocktail for one, that was about 45 milliliters of tequila. So my one part was 15 mils.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with the same amount of tequila for this recipe. And again, I'm using this slightly aged tequila. Okay, so 45 milliliters of tequila. Then I'm actually using about 30 mils of the gooseberry puree. Then I'm going to use a little bit of the triple sec, just to give it a little bit more sweetness, because I think the gooseberry is...
It's a bit tart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a little bit of that orange flavour, so we still feel like we're drinking a margarita as well. So I'm just using 10 millilitres of that. So really just a little flavour. But it's actually very strong.
Yeah.
You know, I was playing around with it and I brought it down quite a bit. And then I'm pretty much using the same amount of lime juice, so 15 mils of lime juice. So it's probably slightly less alcoholic than a margarita itself. Not by much, no, but, you know. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give it a stir and a taste and check that we're on the right track. And this is one of those recipes where I would recommend that you do that. Put the things together, taste it. If you like more lime, put it in. Maybe some more gooseberry. Oh, actually, I think that's coming along rather nicely. Okay, so I'm going to get the glass prepared for this one. So I'm not going to put salt on the rim of this one. I think maybe with the gooseberry you want to go for a slightly sweeter. But if people like salt, you know, absolutely go for the salt. But I'm just going to do exactly the same. So a very similar glass. Fill it up with some ice. And then I'm going to add some ice to my cocktail shaker, shake that up and pour it over, get it nice and cold. Okay, so I've shaken it up over ice. I'm just going to strain it into the glass now. My cocktail shaker has an inbuilt strain. So this time it looks a bit thicker from the gooseberry puree. It looks greener as well.
Yes, it has a nice gooseberry colour.
Yes.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll like that.
I'm sure I will do. And there's a lot of flavours in there.
There is a lot of flavours, and I think from the...
And you can taste the tequila, you can taste the gooseberries, obviously.
Yeah, you know, but the orange flavour of the triple sec comes through, the aged flavour of the tequila, I actually think goes really nicely with the gooseberries in this instance.
Yeah, that's nice. And it has a nice sourness to it still, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, some people may want to, I don't know, add some sugar syrup to sweeten it up, if there's any crazy people out there who like sweet cocktails. But I really think the gooseberry goes nice with that sour. And it was a great opportunity for me to try and get gooseberries into cocktails. As I said, I've struggled with that before, trying to get their flavour into spirits. Mm. I think maybe trying to make a cordial from them or using them as a puree in this way could be the way to go, really. But it was nice to kind of go in an inspiring adventure around Cambridge and then use it to make a cocktail. And this is often how cocktail recipes, you know, come up, or how I decide what to drink, you know, an amalgamation of all these crazy ideas that come together.
Well, thanks to Aoife Maxwell. That was delicious. And you can make it yourself. Details are on Aoife's blog, sweetpeasandsours.com.
And speaking of blogs, on our next programme, Nazima Pathan will tell us about some useful food blogs she's found, and we'll hear more from Sarah Lavelle about how to make your blog stand out to publishers. If you have any blogs you particularly like, please let us know. Email flavour@cambridge105.fm or tweet @flavour105.
On to Cambridge's food and drink news now. Hot Numbers has a coffee tasting on Monday night, that's the 15th of July. Very limited number of places available, so do book on their website or pop into the cafe to reserve your tickets.
The Curly Kale Cafe returns to Urban Larder on the 17th of July for an evening of vegetarian tapas. Email info@urbanlarder for details and to book.
And there are some pop-ups at the Free Press in Prospect Row. Inda's Kitchen is there every Wednesday night, and the Gorilla Kitchen is doing one every Thursday and Friday night.
The Black Cat Cafe is planning a weekend brunch special. Dates have not been announced yet, but if you go onto their mailing list via their website, you can be one of the first to know.
And finally, Corpus Christi College is holding a three-course meal with a pre-dinner drink as part of Open Cambridge. It's on the 12th of September and costs £38. To book, email them conference@corpuschristi.cam.ac.uk or phone Cambridge 761-539. The menu's on their website.
Okay, and that's all the time we have for today. You can listen to a repeat of the programme tomorrow at 7 a.m. and it'll be podcast next week. And remember, you can keep in touch with Cambridge Food and Drink News by following Flavour on Twitter @Flavour105. Previous editions of the programme are available on iTunes and our podcast page on the Cambridge 105 website.
Coming up next is Summer Saturday. At 4 p.m. it's on Mill Road. From 5 till 5.30 in your company with Sam Davis. And at 5.30 it's the Science Show with Roger Frost and Chris Creese.
So, thanks to all of our interviewees today. Our next edition will be in 2 weeks' time on Saturday. Oh, 24th of July, is it? No, 26th, I think.
Yeah, 26.
So, until then, goodbye from us here at Flavour.
Goodbye. Bye.